Well, good morning. We have a full house on this beautiful fall morning. It's good to see you all out there. My notes tell me that one of the reasons we have a full house is that we may have some students from Xavier Catholic High School. If that's the case, will the students and their teacher please stand? Oh, you certainly are the reason. You may be seated. Thank you so much for visiting us. We like to have students come and see what the Supreme Court does during oral arguments. The students are here on a program called Court with Class, which the Supreme Court maintains in conjunction with the State Bar of Wisconsin. Now, we've had a little bit of a look at you, and as you look at us, our first names are not all J, even though that's what the signs may say. So I'll introduce the court to you. On my far right, Justice Rebecca Bradley. Next to her, Justice Annette Ziegler. Next to her, Justice Shirley Abrahamson. I am Pat Rogensack, the Chief Justice. On my left, Justice Ann Walsh Bradley. Next to her, Justice Michael Gableman. At the far end of the bench, Justice Daniel Kelly. With those brief introductions, I will call our first case, State versus Allen. Counsel, are you ready to proceed? Please go.
Thank you. May it please the court. My name is Caitlin Lamb, and I represent Mr. Allen. At issue in this case is to what extent circuit courts can use an expunged conviction at a subsequent sentencing hearing. This court should uphold the rule set forth in State versus Leitner, that circuit courts may only consider the facts or behaviors underlying or giving rise to the conviction. Leitner should be upheld for two reasons. First, the rule in Leitner is consistent with the purpose of expunction. In State v. Hemp, this court stated, at the heart of the expungement statute lies an intention to provide a break to young offenders. Hemp also stated that expunction allows offenders a fresh start without the burden of a criminal record. Allowing a circuit court, like the court did here, to consider the fact that a defendant has an expunged conviction and the fact of prior supervision, which is a direct consequence of a conviction, is considering an expunged conviction and is not okay under Leitner. Additionally, the rule in Leitner is consistent with Wisconsin's sentencing policies. This court has stated that sentencing courts have a general responsibility to acquire full knowledge of character and behavioral pattern of the convicted defendant before imposing sentence. Using the Leitner rule is consistent with inquiring the
counsel,
full
knowledge. Counsel, if sentencing courts can consider conduct that's never even been charged, much less been proven at trial when they make sentencing decisions, how would it be inconsistent for them to consider expunged charges?
Well, I think this just goes back to the nature of the policy behind an expunged conviction. So when it goes to uncharged or unproven offenses, those are still in the record. Whereas here with an expunged conviction, we're saying that the conviction is gone or wiped away. And so by considering, like the court did here, the court actually said Mr. Allen had an expunged conviction, that is improper and is not acceptable under Leitner.
Okay, so you are, I think I see your point as being that it would be a logical, if somewhat robust, extension of the policy considerations behind expungement to preclude a sentencing court from considering. You would just say logical. You wouldn't say robust, but a logical conclusion of the policy considerations behind expungement to say, look, the person has done whatever, has successfully completed whatever preconditions were set so as to successfully obtain expungement. Therefore, in the eyes of the law, that matter never occurred.
That is correct. And I'm not saying that the court can't consider anything. I'm not saying that this is completely gone, I think using the Leitner rule, what the court can still consider is the facts that were underlying the conviction or the facts of the offense. And so I'm not saying, everything is completely wiped out. And
so exactly where did the court go wrong here?
I think the court went wrong here, and there was two particular comments that the court had made. First of all, as I was saying before, the court had referred to a expunged conviction. And like I said, because that is gone, the court should not have referenced that. And then the second part that strikes me is that the court didn't actually discuss the facts of the case, which I find permissible under Leitner. The court never said anything about what Mr. Allen had done in that expunged conviction. So there was no individualized or link to this particular case.
I want to make sure I heard you correctly. The first one was where the court went wrong, referring to the conviction itself.
Yes.
And the second thing was referring to the facts of the case. I thought you just said he could refer to the facts.
Oh, I apologize if I misspoke.
I might just have heard you wrong.
It would be the fact of the expunged conviction, and then it would also be the fact that the court referred to the probation supervision. What I think would have been permissible and would have been acceptable under Leitner would be talking about the actual facts of the crime or the offense that underlied the conviction. So as I was saying, in this particular instance, I don't think that there would be an error if the court had talked about the fact that Mr. Allen, 7 years ago in high school, had punched another person in the face, assuming, of course, that was somehow interrelated or connected to the court's comment.
You need a connection.
Yes.
You need a connection. And there's nothing here that he was drunk at the time of the first offense.
Correct. And that would have been the situation that Leitner said was okay, where in Leitner, the defendant, in the expunged conviction, it was alcohol-related. In fact, I think it was another hit-and-run. At this second case, again, hit-and-run. While he wasn't charged with an alcohol offense in the second case, it certainly was something. And so there was a connection or a link. And
counsel, are you saying there must necessarily be a connection before the court can consider the facts that supported the expunged conviction?
Under Leitner, I read Leitner to say that it can be the facts underlying the conviction and that it also must somehow be interrelated. And so I do think that there has to be some connection or interrelation between the facts of the offense in order to make an individualized sentence. Mm-hmm. That being said, even if this court were to say that just the facts underlying the offense alone or the conviction alone was enough, that is not something that has happened here. It was not individualized. The court just simply referred to the fact that he had an expunged conviction and also the fact that he had been on probation supervision.
All right. So can we back up to the beginning of the analysis and look at the statute? Is there any text in the statute that suggests the court may not consider what it did in this sentencing?
I do not see anything in the statute that bears directly on this particular issue. I think the statute, in my opinion, is silent on that matter. And so what I'm really looking at or hoping that this court would continue what it concluded in Leitner and continue using the test or the rule that Leitner set forward. And this case would be an example under Leitner that was not okay. The court's comments here did not satisfy or were not acceptable under that rule.
All right. Is there, are you asking us simply to extend policy of Leitner, or is there any, support in common law or other statutes for that extension?
So, in terms of other statutes, I'm not aware of anything similar. Just as I was saying in the beginning, I mean, this is a very unique circumstance because what we're dealing with, we're dealing with an expunged conviction. We're not dealing with a dismissal, an acquittal, something that was still remains in the record. So I'm not able to think of any similar statute. In terms of common law, also, my main support or the main case I feel we're looking at would be State versus Leitner, that there wasn't much else that is in the state that I'm aware of, any other cases that would have dealt with this issue. And So what I'm asking...
What about other states? What do they do about expungement?
So I had generally looked at that very non-exhaustively, and I didn't find a similar case that was on point. And I think part of that is just going to Justice Kelly's question is because it's very statute-specific, some of these questions. And so here, since our statute does not say anything, there wasn't a lot that I saw elsewhere that I could find that was on point or would have been helpful.
What I hear...
Please, go ahead. What I hear you saying is when I look at the words of the statute, it says that the court may order at the time of sentencing that the record be expunged upon successful completion of the sentence and then give certain criteria. The record you would like us to define as broader than the court file. Is that true? Because there are records in Department of Corrections, there would be jail records, there might be other treatment records. When someone's writing a PSI, they often go to a variety of resources. But the court isn't ordering that the records of DOC be eliminated or expunged. The court can only deal with the court records. So what I hear you saying is a logical extension of the meaning and policy behind expunction is that the court just shouldn't consider it. The court can consider facts, but not the conviction, not the sentence, not the probation, because that's the benefit of expunction. Am I getting your argument?
Yes, that is correct, and I'm not asking the court to modify or change. I know Leitner spent a significant amount of time talking about what the court record, what the record meant, and I'm not talking at all. What I'm specifically looking at, what the court can and cannot consider at the time of sentencing. And so an analogy would be, I know this court recently issued a decision in State versus Loomis, which dealt with the Compass case. And so I'm asking the court to make a similar finding of what the court can and cannot consider. And so here, I'm asking that the court hold, as in Leitner, that the court, that a circuit court can not consider an expunged conviction at the time of sentencing. So placing a limit on what is permissible.
Are you asking something tantamount to you can't consider a expunged conviction for purposes of increasing the penalty? Is that what you're asking for?
I think that would be in line of what I would be asking, is that they not take it into consideration when imposing a person's sentence. And so
they can consider, it's your position, they can consider the underlying facts of the expunged conviction, but not tally up, if you will, that expunged conviction with others in order to increase the penalty.
That is correct. I think that they could use the underlying facts, perhaps, to increase or sentence a defendant, but I do not think that you can use the fact of an expunged conviction. Just because it, when you have something expunged here, you know, it's similar to everyone. It's, you know, not an individualized finding. And the court here just talked about the fact and basically held it against the defendant that he had this expunged conviction. And so I do not think under Leitner that that is permissible. And once again, I think it would be different if the court under Leitner had said, well, he had, you know, if he could, if the court could somehow relate the facts underlying the offense to the sentencing at issue.
What about a pardon? Is that analogous? Does your argument by analogy also implicate pardons?
I think that's different because, once again, we're a pardon, my understanding at least, is means that the conviction isn't there, but it's different in that expunction, there's confidentiality, the record is sealed, and so I would think that might be slightly a different situation. But once again, that wouldn't be at issue in this particular case. So perhaps that may also be something that would be left for another day or another case.
I heard Justice Bradley insert the word for purposes of increasing a penalty. What if instead this judge said, you know, you did such a great job on probation, I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt and give you probation again, because you have proven to be a good candidate for probation. So what if the expunged record resulted in more lenient sentence? You wouldn't make the same argument, would you?
Well, I think that it would still not be permissible under Leitner for the court to talk about that expunged conviction.
Okay.
I mean, from a practical matter, I think that if that happened,
you wouldn't be here.
You wouldn't be appealing. But it just seems to me that Leitner is pretty clear that it's the facts that are underlying the conviction, and so that just wouldn't be okay. And I would also note, if this court would decide that something along those lines was permissible, that still didn't happen here. I mean, the court never made any comments about the probation being successful. The court just, the way I read the comments, is just talked about probation, supervision, and just talked about an expunged conviction.
Counsel, can you help me tie your request to the purpose of the expulsion statute? In particular, as addressed by State v. Hemp, which said that expungement allows offenders to present themselves to the world, including future employers, unmarked by past wrongdoing. Basically, the idea of a fresh start, right? That's kind of the idea behind the expulsion statute?
Yes.
All right. So in this case, he got the fresh start, and he fumbled it. Now he's back in the criminal justice system. Why should we ignore the fact that he's been there before?
Well, first, I'm not asking to ignore in the sense that the court can still look at those facts and this conduct and could use that against.
Why should we have to ignore the fact that he was convicted and placed on probation?
I just think that when something is expunged, it's a fresh start, it wipes out, and if the courts are considering that conviction again, I think that eliminates the meaning and weakens what expunction would mean, because you can use it again. I also think that, Leitner says that you cannot use an expunged conviction for a repeater enhancement, so you can't use it a second time.
And why is that?
So the repeater enhancer, at least if you look at the particular statute, the statute says something along the lines of the conviction must remain or...
So expunction, when you expunge the record, that takes off the record that conviction. And isn't that why it can't be used later as part of a repeater sentence?
Yes. Okay.
So it fulfills that purpose. But if we're talking about not a repeater statute, but we're talking about the court exercising its discretion to set a sentence within proper parameters, why does the fact that this was expunged mean that the court must ignore it?
I think, once again, just because by discussing the fact that you have that expunged conviction, and particularly in this case, holding it against the person, they're using it despite the fact that it had already been wiped out.
Okay, so then maybe what we need to talk about is what exactly happens when a record is expunged under 973.005. How about that?
Yes. So my understanding, first I should say, I don't think there's been a case that I could locate on the actual procedure, but there is a Supreme Court rule, I believe it's 7206, that talks about what happens when there's expunction. I know the record is sealed, and then the next portion of it says that the record is destroyed pursuant to the rules. And so my understanding is that this record is just sealed. I imagine, and could be mistaken, that perhaps it would depend on the county, maybe what procedures were involved.
There are four or five provisions in that rule, and it's not either or. I think it's all of them, if I remember. I didn't pull it out.
I do not have it on me, but I do know there are a number of steps. If you look at it, 7206, and it just explains what happens or what procedure circuit court should follow. And
okay,
under that particular rule, my understanding is that the record is sealed.
Okay. So let's say that the court complies with all of that, right? record stays sealed. The court's not looking at the court record when it's sentencing. That's outside the bounds. That's what expungement accomplishes. But there's other sources of information about that conviction. Why, given that the expungement statute has done its work and done it successfully, why can't the court take account of facts, including the fact that he was convicted, when that information comes from a different source?
I just think, Your Honor, that using it again is going against the fresh start, the fact that this conviction no longer exists, that it's a nullity, therefore is a reason that you can't actually talk about the conviction
right.
itself.
So wouldn't it make sense to say, I mean, because we're in the policy realm here, right? I mean,
yes.
We're not talking about statutory requirements. So wouldn't it make sense to say, well, you got your fresh start when you had your record expunged, but by committing another crime, you forfeited that fresh start, and we can go back and look at what you've done before.
Well, I think the court could find that, but I just think that's inconsistent with all the language that's in Hemp about the conviction, the fresh start, giving another person a second chance, and just the fact or the underlying reason that we have expunction. And so I would ask that this court not do that. I think it's more consistent with Hemp that we say the court could talk about the facts but cannot talk about the actual act of the conviction. Additionally, I just think that in this particular case, I think that it's not really satisfying the goal of individualized sentencing. I mean, once again, anyone who has something expunged, they would have completed the probation. And so I would assert that the court's comments weren't specifically tailored to my client here.
Right. So,
and
one of the other factors that a sentencing court has to consider is safety of the community, right?
Yes.
All right. So if a court is pretending like a prior conviction did not occur, is it discharging its responsibility to look out for the safety and well-being of the community?
I do not think so, in the sense of that the court would be, or most likely would be, aware of, you know, the person's previous conduct. And to the extent that that conduct would be similar to what it was getting sentenced for, I think that that would be something that would help inform the court in terms of protection of the public and the safety of the community. And so I don't think that not allowing the courts to use the conviction as a sentencing would necessarily hamper. Because like I said, in this, or in Leitner, for instance, the court was well aware that the defendant had this prior incident where alcohol was involved, and the court was again seeing the fact that alcohol was involved with the client. And so I felt that, you know, the court would be able to make a reasoned example. And so I'm not saying that the court couldn't consider any information. I'm just asking that this court find that the court not consider the fact of an expunged conviction when sentencing a defendant.
Let's see if I understand your argument. One, under the expungement or expungement statute, a successive court cannot consider the court record of that has been expunged.
That is correct.
Under Leitner, the court can consider facts that the court gets from non-court records.
That is correct.
Okay. And in this case, it's a non-court record. It's the PSI and where they got it. It's irrelevant for the moment. It's not a court record.
Yes.
Okay. And the fact, it's not clear to me exactly what the trial court was considering here. Okay. What facts? The inference can be drawn, and this is what Judge Kessler, I think, wrote the concurrence drew. The inference drawn, or maybe, and what later you can tell me if you exactly what the court said, the trial court said it was considering. But anyway, the inference drawn is that the trial court drew the inference that because it was expunged, he had to have successfully considered successfully completed probation, right?
Yes.
In my mind, and I think in yours, if he successfully completed probation, that's a plus in his on his record.
Yes.
And should have been considered favorably by the court. But what happened? The court said, okay, he successfully completed probation, but I'm giving him a year more than the state asked for anyway. And the state and the court can do that because it's something that you and I or the state thinks mitigates for purposes of sentencing. The court doesn't have to think it mitigates, right?
That is correct.
Okay. So what's the matter with that? The court considered the facts. Are you saying that the fact of probation and successful completion of probation cannot be considered per se, period, the end? Is that your point?
Yes, that okay. is my point, as I believe point. That probation is a direct consequence and intertwined with the expunged
okay.
conviction.
But if the court had a PSI that said he's been a good boy since the expunged record and since probation, the court can consider that.
So you're saying that the court could consider that he hadn't committed any crimes?
Yes, since then. He hasn't been reported, he hasn't been arrested, job, that all that can be considered.
I think that would be slightly different than considering an individual's actual expunged conviction
and probation.
And probation. That being said, I mean, that was not, once again, what had happened in this particular
case.
So
the rule that you want to come out of this is the trial court cannot consider probation record of an expunged conviction.
Yes.
Period.
I'm asking that this court uphold the rule set forth in Leitner, that they not expand it, which I read the Court of Appeals doing is expanding this rule. And so I would just ask that they uphold that and that they find in this instance that the court improperly used.
Thank you, counsel.
You're asking that the facts that the court can consider in Leitner do not include the successful completion of the sentence or non-sentence probation.
Yes.
That's what you're asking.
Correct.
That's an interpretation of Leitner.
Thank you, counsel.
Yes.
Are you ready to proceed? Please do.
May it please the court, my name is Warren Weinstein. I'm an assistant attorney general representing the state of Wisconsin. I think this case points out a problem, or at least the rule that Allen advocates, and it conflicts with two really important policies that this court and the state has always had. One is that a sentencing court in individualized sentencing always can have the most complete information available about a defendant. And this rule that Allen wishes the court to adopt would insulate a certain amount of behavior from the court in a sentencing situation. And I think in most instances it would cut against defendants because, as Justice Abrahamson pointed out, I think most judges would take successful completion of supervision as a positive.
Well,
and yet,
you don't get expungement unless there was successful completion, do you?
Completion of the sentence, it
yeah,
may or may
probation
not.
Probation may or may not be a sentence.
Yeah, that's right.
I understand that, but that's all. That's
right, but if there is probation or extended supervision,
right.
there would have to be successful completion
right.
of it, yes. But successful completion might include several ATRs, alternatives to revocation, which might elucidate the defendant's character, which is one of the things, it seems to me, Leitner focuses on the fact that the facts, not, I don't think they happen to be necessarily related to the current crime, they have to be related to the behavior of the defendant. And to the extent that successful or or alternatives to revocation or behavior that happens on supervision reflects on the defendant's behavior and its overall character, that's the kind of information we normally want sentencing judges to be aware of.
Counsel, other than the prohibition against using the expunged conviction for purposes of repeater sentencing, does 973.015 shield from the court's view anything about the expunged conviction?
Well, there are a couple of other benefits. For instance, you can't impeach a witness based on an expunged conviction.
Right, but as that far as sentencing goes, does it shield anything else from the court?
Other than the records, I think not.
Okay. So if the information in those records can be found somewhere else, that's something the court should be able to look at.
Well, and I think that's the rationale that underlies Leitner's decision, that the term records in the statute refers only to court records. And it seems to me that one of the serious problems you would have if you said to judges, we know you're going to know about this, but you can't consider it, is it's considered, but it's not in the record. And so how does the appellate court review that?
Well, but that runs through the whole gamut of the law, that you say to a jury, don't consider it, we're striking it, they have it anyway. The judge says strike it, the judge has it anyway. I mean, this, if you keep moving on that, you undercut everything in the law that says if you tell a judge, you tell a jury not to consider it, you expect them to be good boys and girls and not consider it.
That's true. And I think to the extent it makes sense to do that.
That's right.
But I think the best way to...
You're saying it's fiction.
Well, I think it is a fiction. But I think the best way to police it is to encourage the most complete record you can get so you can have some idea of whether or not a court considered it even though it said it didn't.
Counselor, when you started out, you said there were two important policies
that
the states already had, and you gave us one. What's the second?
The second one was just that we want the most complete record of the exercise of sentencing discretion that we can get so appellate courts can review them.
Okay, so
and that we can say on occasion, even though a judge said, I didn't consider it, it's clear from the transcript that you did consider it.
So what's
we've
the
had
record,
a few of those cases.
What's the record here of how the court considered this? And
well,
what exactly the court considered?
The court did mention it once, the conviction itself. But just once, and actually got the crime wrong. But I think what the judge did was he said, you've successfully completed supervision, but you didn't learn your lesson. That's why, whether you agree with it or not, that's why the sentencing judge believed that was a negative.
And the reason that he didn't learn his lesson is he then committed another crime.
Yes.
And so it's of a different kind.
It was. It was not, as far as anything in the record goes, there was no alcohol connection involved in the first crime, and there was no assaultive behavior in the second.
And what was the time period between the two crimes? What was the time period between the two crimes?
I believe it was 7 years, but I'm not positive about that.
So do we have enough of a record to show to support the trial court?
Well, if the trial court can consider the supervision behavior, the successful completion, whether that's plus or a minus is really for the sentencing court. I think there is sufficient support under Galleon for the sentence here.
That's your second policy argument.
I'm sorry.
Because that's your second policy argument.
I think
review the record.
Right, and the transcript I think supports the exercise of discretion here, and it really wasn't all that much off of what the state recommended. Counsel, in order to obtain the benefit of expungement, the judge has to make two determinations, among others, that the defendant will be benefited and society will not be harmed.
Right.
Does there seem to be something inconsistent in making that determination and then the conclusion that if the defendant successfully completes all of the conditions, whether probation or whether other things, and then turning around at some point in the future and resurrecting the offense, which a court has determined that not only would the defendant be benefited, but society would not be harmed by its expungement. In other words, to give you the context of my question, in my 6 years as a trial court, I found expungement to be a very, very useful tool in the right cases. And there seems to me to be something inconsistent with the spirit, if not the precise words of the statute, of telling an offender, yes, the offense will be expunged from your record, but if it ever becomes convenient for the state to do so, the offense will be resurrected and then will be used against you. So can you help me by articulating a rule that would balance those two things, the idea that the matter will be taken away from the record forever, but yet resurrected if it becomes convenient to the state. So what rule should we articulate if you had the opportunity to write the holding that would balance the two?
I think the problem comes, and this I recognize this is not a direct answer to your question, for which I apologize.
I'm used to it.
I'm sure you are. I think the problem comes down in what, before Leitner, what people thought of as expungement of the record. Because it's clear from some of the quotes in Leitner that the circuit court in that case, and perhaps the court of appeals in that case, and especially in Anderson also, that there was a view that expungement would reach beyond merely the court records to, if you will, not only expunge the record, but the memory.
I hate to interrupt.
That's okay.
I'm sure you're used to it.
Yes.
There's some language in Leitner that, quite frankly, I don't understand. And maybe you can help me with your understanding. And it's along the lines of nothing in the history of the statute indicates that the legislature intended that all of the record would be wiped away so that if it's part of the government record, it would remain. But for instance, if it was part of a testimony of a witness, it would stay. And I'm thinking to myself, how is it ever that testimony of a witness in a criminal case would not be part of a government record? I don't understand that. What's your understanding of that?
My understanding, I think you're right. I think
if it was a testimony of a witness, at a minimum, it would be in the transcript.
Which would be part of a government
record. Which would be part of a government record. And not only a government record, but a court record. I think what they're referring to is the fact that in many cases we have evidence brought in of prior bad acts, and that in the course of doing that, there may be testimony in a given case where a witness testifies to the underlying facts of an expunged conviction.
I'm sorry, run that past me one more time.
Well, if for instance in this assault case, this battery case,
yeah,
it had gone to trial and the trial court had permitted other acts, the state may have brought in the victim of that battery to testify of to the other acts, and then we would have testimony in this case, not only whatever happened in the other one. And I think maybe that's what they were referring to. I think you're right. It's very confusing, that statement, to me also. But that's the best that I can make.
And that brings up a broader thing about Leitner that I don't understand, is that there's a lot of language in there that seems to be attempting to draw distinctions between the record of the expungement itself versus records of underlying facts, which would not be part of the records of the expungement. And again, I think to myself, what possible records could there be that would not be considered? And the reason I'm asking these questions is, do we have cleanup work to do in Leitner to provide guidance to judges and lawyers? And I'm trying to think, what kind of records could there possibly be in connection with expungements, or underlying records, as the phrase is used, that would not be part of the record of the expungement itself?
Well, one thing that occurs to me immediately is NCIC and the statewide database, whatever it's called.
Well, that's another can of worms.
Yeah, it is. And that's, I think, one of the things that drove the ultimate decision in Leitner, because of the impossibility of actually getting anything out of that kind of a database, yeah, and second of all, preventing a judge from becoming aware of it, which presents all the problems of whether, if the judge can't consider it but is aware of it.
That's a good point. And we've heard discussion in this room in a different way in far of rules in the context of rules hearings, where we've been asked to change the rules concerning record keeping in regard to expungement. It's a matter that I really am interested in and care deeply about. And that brings up the whole tension between a circuit court judge ordering a record be expunged and telling a youthful offender, okay, society recognizes that young people make mistakes, and this record is going to be expunged because we recognize you made a mistake, and now you're about to do a series of things that I'm going to tell you to do over the next year or two or so. And if you do those things successfully, the matter will be taken off your record as if it never occurred. But lo and behold, we have all sorts of record keepers out there who are busily putting these things on the computer systems, so that anyone with access to the internet can pull it up for the rest of your life. So that's what I mean. Yes, Justice Bradley said that's a problem, and I agree, that's a problem.
I think it is, and it compounds itself, because even if you were to say, because the CCAP perhaps is an example, I'm not sure how good it is, but it's an example, and at least this court and most of the courts have at least some control or at least input into what goes in and can be taken out of CCAP. But even if you take it out of CCAP,
right,
that doesn't mean that a circuit judge isn't going to become aware of it from some other source.
The DOJ has its own.
As do the DAs, as do police departments, as does the Department of Corrections. And in fact, in this case, it was clear, it's clear from the record, that the PSI writer was relying on DOC records and NCIC. And
so with all of this being said, coming back to the actual part of the matter that we're talking about, what rule, it seems to me that you, obviously, you've thought about this for some time, and you're in as good a position as probably anybody in this room to articulate a proposed rule that would balance all of these things. What rule would you propose as a result of this case that we could apply?
I think the only real practical thing that we can do is to say expungement means you can't use this for repeater status.
What is this?
It has double jeopardy
provisions.
Our implications. You can't be impeached by it at a future trial. You can tell employers and others that you don't have a criminal record. And then we should encourage the most complete record in the circuit court that we can so that the appellate courts can review. And if I agree that if a judge were to say or actually increase a punishment based solely on the fact that the person had an expunged conviction, that if it doesn't cross the line yet, it gets on it. So if that's what had happened here, I think it would be the appellate court should be justified in ordering a new sentencing. But it's clear from the record that Judge Wagner didn't actually consider the fact of conviction. He considered its effect on the future behavior. And it seems to me what the rule that Allen advocates.
But counsel, if the court cannot consider the fact of conviction, aren't we asking them to just play pretend? If you have all of the information surrounding the conviction, the facts that led up to it, the charging, the fact that there was a trial, sentencing, we know what's in the middle of all that, right? It's a conviction. Why can't they take account of that conviction?
Well, I guess the short answer is because it was expunged and the statute seems to contemplate at least that much of the destruction of the court record. When you're talking about actual legal reliance on the prior conviction, as you would with pleading and proving a repeater and the court increasing the range of punishment because of that.
Clearly you can't do that.
Yes, clearly you can't do that. And that's easy to monitor and easy to identify. When it's subjective, when the court says, this guy's been in the system before, I'm going to up the range, the punishment within the range, that's where you get into the problem of if you don't have a record that clearly shows what the judge was thinking, or as close as we can get to that, there's just no way at all to review it or to correct those cases that we can identify where it happened.
Right. So isn't the rule that you're proposing then simply that the court cannot increase a sentence on the basis of something that needs to be a matter of record, right? And if it's a matter, if it has to be something that's a matter of record, for example, if you're doing a repeater sentence and it's been expunged, you can't consider it. Well, everything else is fair game. Isn't that the rule you're proposing?
Well, not everything else, but the things that we've enumerated, like impeachment and,
right,
and that sort of thing.
I have a question.
Not quite, I don't think.
Okay.
And I agree with Alan to the extent that I think a sentencing judge should not increase what they would normally give to somebody had in the same exactly the same situation without an expunged conviction. But I don't think there's any real way to police that other than to have a very complete record and allow the appellate courts and perhaps the fear of being reversed as a deterrent to judges. I think otherwise the same thing is going to happen, and we're not going to have any kind of record at all because the reaction of trial judges will just say, be subconsciously, I want to give this guy 6 years instead of four, but I can't say anything about the in any way about the expunged conviction. So it goes up, and we have a record of, you know, the litany that we all normally see, and nothing else.
I sort of hear you fast-forwarding to a remedy without maybe touching all the bases. Are you conceding that counsel was ineffective if the judge inappropriately relied on
Well, I don't think
condition?
The judge did appropriately rely in this case.
Well, I know, but what you've said is then he's entitled to a resentencing. So in other words, you're conceding, I think, that if counsel's right, he gets to be sentenced again. But I hear you laying fault at on what the judge did without undergoing any sort of ineffective assistance of counsel analysis. So where are we on that? Do we need to undergo an ineffective assistance of counsel analysis?
I don't think so. If counsel's right, he gets a resentencing without having to do ineffective assistance of counsel. If counsel's wrong, there's no ineffectiveness.
Counsel here is wrong. Not trial counsel.
Right. In this case, either, I mean, Alan made the proper objection in post-conviction motion. He's raised it. He hasn't waived it. So if the judge actually referred to and solely referred to the record of conviction, then he's entitled to resentencing. That we know.
And it matters not what trial counsel did.
I don't think so, because in the record in this case, I don't think the judge relied on the fact of conviction. I think the judge relied on the
lack of learning the lesson.
Exactly.
Which is what you said
right
15 minutes ago.
Okay. Yes.
That it really what you're saying is you don't think counsel was ineffective. I mean, in all fairness, the defense argued ineffective assistance of counsel, and I don't hear you responding to that.
Well, and it's again because it, in my view, the decision on whether or not the judge erred resolves the case entirely, because if he did err, he gets the same remedy he would get with an ineffective assistance of counsel. If he didn't err, there can be no ineffective assistance of counsel. So the total issue in the case, really, to me, is did the trial court err? And I agree we should address that on the merits, but whatever way it comes out, that's really the end of the matter.
Are you done? Leitner, I wrote Leitner.
You did.
In 2002, which is like 14 years ago. Frankly, I had totally forgotten the case. When I went back to read it, I was a little surprised that the first 41 paragraphs, which is the majority of the paragraphs, because it's only runs 48 paragraphs, relate to what does the expungement statute cover? Because the cases, and parties disagreed as to whether the expungement covered every government record in existence or only the court record. And so 41 paragraphs were devoted to saying that the expungement statute relates only to the court record. Everybody else who has a record, anybody else who has any material on this case, it's open and fair game. At least it's not covered by the expungement statute. Isn't that right?
That's the way I read it.
Okay. And then at paragraph 42, we get to the second issue, which is the issue here, which is, as it's stated in the opinion, the circuit court heard in sentencing, this is on the second case, when it considered information about the facts underlying the record of the first expunged conviction, and therefore requires resentencing, right? And the response is that although the court records of expunged convictions cannot be considered by the sentencing court, nothing states whether in sentencing for a subsequent offense, a court may consider facts underlying a record of a conviction expunged when they're in somebody else's record. Right?
Right.
Because the court record is finished, gone, destroyed, sealed, burned, whatever it is, right? Okay. And in this case, you have reliance on non-court records, right?
Right.
And so in Leitner 2, you had reliance on non-court records. And the court said that, as you said, the public policy is that the sentencing should be for public safety and for the defendant. And you can look at everything, acquittal, blah, 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 right, which is the law. And to assure that the circuit court has full information, this is relevant. The facts underlying are relevant. So when Wisconsin 973015 is read in the contents of the objectives of sentencing, that's Gallion and McCleary, it is clear that the legislature didn't intend the statute to deprive sentencing courts of relevant information regarding an offender when that information is in government, not court files, relating to a record of conviction. What do you want changed about Leitner?
Nothing.
That's what I thought you'd say. I mean, I thought that's what you'd say, but I'm not as I may not be as committed to Leitner as you are. That's really the problem.
I think the key there, though, is
can you tell us what
ends up being relevant.
That's right.
And in my view, someone's behavior on supervision is relevant to overall character.
Well, but this here, the defendant's behavior was good. Right.
Yeah, now that's the very surprising thing about this case.
That's right. That's where the rub is here.
That's right.
And so the court is using good behavior to mean, okay, you got slapped. You were a good boy for a long time, but apparently the slap and the good behavior for the 7 years or whatever time period we're talking about was not enough to teach you a lesson, so this time I'm going to teach you a better lesson. I mean, that's the reasoning of the trial court here.
I believe so, yes.
So the question then is it relevant? Is the good behavior relevant? Now, the defense says no, because it's warped. And two, in fact, it's a warped in that you didn't learn because you were a good boy. You didn't learn. And it's warped because the underlying facts are not sufficiently similar to this one. If there had been a showing of alcohol or drugs that influenced his assaultive behavior, say, 7 years ago, I think the defense would have a terribly difficult time saying that that's not relevant. Shows he drank too much, gets into trouble, now he's drinking too much, and now instead of just hurting a guy, he's killing him. He's hurting somebody else. So I don't know what you want to change about Leitner.
He said nothing. And
know,
you know, counsel, I have another question for you, but your red light is on,
yes.
So thank you.
Well, if you don't want
we,
to change
we respect
anything,
the red light in this room, so thank you, counsel.
If you don't want to change anything, then you think it's covered by Leitner. It's covered under relevant. Is that right, counsel? You're nodding affirmatively. Okay, I accept.
If if I am understanding the state correctly, I hear the state agreeing with me that you can't rely on an expunged conviction.
The state seems to be arguing for the essence, the guts of Leitner, which makes sense. So what disagreement, if any, do you have with his argument?
What I disagree is how then that whether or not an expunged conviction was in fact improperly used by the state.
And he's saying no. He's saying it wasn't the fact of the expunged conviction. It was the trial court observing, look, you had that benefit. However, you failed to draw the appropriate lesson from that benefit. And so, therefore, as a consequence, this is what I'm going to impose.
Yes, and that is exactly what I disagree with. I read the court's comments to improperly be...
But how is that inconsistent with Leitner? If Leitner says that the court record is sealed, and although there are some quibbles about how witness testimony could ever not be part of the court record, but if there are things that are not part of a court record, such as district attorney notes, other law enforcement agency records that are out there in existence, as your opposing counsel notes, all sorts of record keepers out there that Leitner does not cover, how is what the trial court did here inconsistent with Leitner?
Well, I read Leitner to mean, once again, that you cannot that you can only consider the facts underlying or giving rise to a conviction. And so,
can you say that? Or I couldn't hear.
Yes, I read Leitner to specifically limit what a court can consider to the facts that are underlying or that give rise to a conviction. So even though there is all that information that is out there in the PSI or say a district attorney's office, I read Leitner to mean that you can only talk about those facts. So in this particular instance, the facts underlying the offense. And so I think, if I'm understanding the state, we're in agreement that you can't actually talk about the expunged conviction. And so I would disagree, though, with the state in the sense of I think here the court was talking about the expunged conviction. Court referenced.
As I read Leitner, it acknowledges that there are record keepers out there that the circuit court cannot compel in the context of a sentencing hearing, such as the Department of Justice, such as the Department of Corrections, such as the various investigating law enforcement agencies, all of whom keep their own records, which could include and do include, as we all know, the record of conviction.
Yes, and I am not taking issue with Leitner in terms of other agencies or other places having information. What I'm specifically focusing on and
asking...
So what
did the judge do wrong?
Well, I think that the judge had relied on the fact that Mr. Allen had an expunged conviction and used that against him to increase his sentence.
Counsel, are you, in your briefs, you argue that the court then undertakes an ineffective assistance of counsel analysis. Are you abandoning that now that the state seems to have conceded that we don't need to do that?
I would agree with the state. I only raise ineffective if this court were, or the Court of Appeals were, to determine that it had been forfeited or waived. I agree that
did trial counsel object to the PSI for his sentencing?
Correct. There was no objection.
Right.
And so if this...
I understood your argument to be failing to object to both PSI and at sentencing resulted in ineffective assistance of counsel and that you were asking us to undertake that analysis as part of this.
Yes, if this court would determine that there was either a waiver or a forfeiture of the argument. And then I would assert that trial counsel should have objected and should have at least put the court on notice that the comments should have been limited and couldn't consider a expunged conviction and that you could only consider the underlying facts.
Thank you.
Does that answer your question?
Thank you.
Counsel, I wonder if you could help me with the scope of the underlying facts that you believe the circuit court may properly consider in the sentencing. And let's work backwards temporally from the conviction. So you say the conviction cannot be considered. Let's take a step back from that. The conduct and the information that came out at trial, can the circuit court consider that?
I think that the court could consider specific facts about the person's conduct or the behavior. I think it's a closer call if the court, you know, I don't think that anything involving the court process, I think that goes along with the conviction, and so I would say that would not be something. It would just be simply facts. Perhaps, you know, if somebody had testified about a particular incident, that is, to me at least, the facts that are related to or underlying the conviction.
Thank you, counsel.
But that has to not be gotten from the court record, but from a different government record or a different record available.
That is correct.
That's right.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
Well, I thank you both for very, very good arguments. This is an interesting statute, one that has a lot of public interest as well as a lot of court interest behind it. We're going to take a break so that another group of students can come in. I didn't mention to this group from Xavier Catholic High School that Justice Annette Ziegler will come and speak with you at the break after the second case. So if you can come back, please do. She won't talk to you about the specifics of the case, but we'll tell you quite a little bit about how the court works. So I think that you'll find it very interesting. We are adjourned until our second case. Thank you very much.